Okay, so we're holding here in Parshas Vayishlach, and it says Vayyom. It says if Esav will come, Alamat Nafiko, the other one will be left over the Plato. So the Avinezer here is sort of kind of asking a Shaila whether or not the Navi needs to know everything, and if the Navi doesn't know it, is it some sort of problem with the Navi? So the Avinezer says, it says, Vayamach Nishol Plato, Yaakov was kind of hedging his bets, maybe this, maybe this. So the Avinezer says, Ula Yoshe Yivrichu, so if one of them find out the other one has been decimated, they're going to run away. Maybe his brother's anger will subside after hitting one machna. Or maybe Hashem will help them. And so on. So basically, the dividing up into two machnas was had many mahalchim al pidar chateva why it would work. Rashi says that it will definitely be a plato. That's not it's not bederech drash, but it's not pshat. Ve'im Hashem amalo v'yozach kaparetz. I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, told him aftoch v'yozach kaparetz. Doesn't that mean it's going to have to be? That's about karcha. So the Nezer time is no. Lo yeda im al elo al acherim. He doesn't know if he means these or means others. Kihine Yosef kashenimka Yaakov chayz. So it could very well be that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised him, maybe this entire family would go and there'd be other ones. He says, and he sort of is bothered, well, as a Navi, wouldn't he know? So he says, no. Hine Yosef kashenimka Yaakov chayz. When Yosef was sold, Yaakov was living. V'hullo yoda, and he didn't know. Ki ein ha-Navi yoda nistaros on legal Hashem. A Navi doesn't have his own Ruach HaKodesh, kind of. Doesn't have his own ability to go and look for information in private files. All it is simply that when and if HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, he chooses to tell a Navi. So he didn't know Yosef was sold, even though he was a Navi. Chazal and Rashi say that's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu hid it from him. You know, it's Mashman normally would have known, but there was like a special effort to hide it from him. But he meant it differently. Velisha Amar Vashem Helim Mimeni. So it's interesting. So the Psukim, like when he's being arrived from Elisha, over there it says Hashem hid it from me. So it's Mashma, he was expected to have known, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu made an effort to hide it. But he learns differently. Gamzei Satshuva Shalom Echpoch Diakov Hashem Shticho V'Ome Ve'Yimach Gamzei V'Yosho Tipcha Imach Shitoch Yimol Ho'Vade. In other words, they ask, how was Yaakov afraid? He said he wasn't sure in the Nevuah what it meant. It could mean that you'll be safe, but your family, Chas V'Shalom, will be gone. So B'Meila, a Navi knows only what HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses to tell him, and what he doesn't know, and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses not to reveal to him, is as blind as anyone else. The next Eben Ezra is a very, very yesodistic Eben Ezra in understanding much of Tanakh. Much of Tanakh deals with the sins of great people. And how do we look at it? How do we understand it? Were they great people? Weren't they great people? So Ezra gives us the Yesod that really is the it's the aleph base of learning Tanakh. The Od Yadani says, "Ki kol avoin katan v'gadol kinegra osa." The severity of an avera is measured with the one who does it. Al ken ha avoin hakal legadol yikare gadol. So a small avera for a big person is called a big avera. If we see a big person, a person whom we've taken to be something of Shivas, doing things that are minorly inappropriate, we still feel it's wrong, and we feel it's a terrible blot because he's so special. This is something Va'al Tetami says, and don't be surprised at this. Yaakov pochat shemachotish agmach shaftoi, vavur ze lui Hashem imo. Yaakov knew that he hadn't done any great averus. I mean, Yaakov did a cheshbon nefesh, and Yaakov knew that there were no big ones there in his ledger, But Yaakov said, small averus, shogeg, or, you know, kind of machshava, I can't say for sure not, and for someone like me, that counts. Ba'alta Tame, he says, take a look how HaKadosh Baruch Hu reacts to the slight averus of big people. Kine says, Moshe Shein L'malamena. There's nobody bigger than Moshe Rabbeinu. Vehu Sholcha L'hoites from Mitzrayim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends him to redeem Klal Yisrael. So the greatest person at the greatest moment in history. And yet, because he had forgotten and was b'shogeg, because the conditions weren't ripe for making a bris on his son, he sent the malach to kill him. So you see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu evaluates averus kefi the person. It's something that's important to remember, because there's a certain conundrum about the learning all the averus in the Torah about big people, Yosef and his brothers. So, doesn't the Torah tell us the story to teach us jealousy? Isn't that what the Torah is teaching us with it? I mean, the stories that the Torah gives us are for lessons, and the lessons, a big part of that lesson would be about the friction between the brothers. Whether you learn about Yosef sort of waving a red flag, and he did wrong, that was called Maisa Nairus, the brothers with their kinna, and having to make up for it by defending Binyamin and so on. That story is something which does teach us that. And the Chatoi Maklai, so on. So how do we approach that? On the other hand, we seem to have this thing about, you know, Chas v'Sholom, we can even think and dream and so on and so forth, that they did not bear. And there's something to it also. We have to understand something. If David HaMelech is as bad as a simple reading of Tanakh would lead us to believe, then I humbly would say that I am much more Chas v'Sholom than HaMelech. In recent memory, I haven't killed anybody or made up on anybody's wife or anything like that. So, I mean, why don't I get an honorable mention at least? I mean, Aaron gets honorable mention, but I don't think same last name. So what's the... So why? What does it mean HaKadosh Baruch Hu likes David? You know, a human being has weaknesses. So Pliny Almoni, who's not a great person, a little bit of a swindler, but he's charming and he's cute and he's nice and he's interesting and he's fun, so I have a soft spot for him. That's a weakness of mine. So-and-so is a mean person, a nasty person, but he gives a lot of money for my institution, and therefore I have a soft spot for him. That's a weakness, and admitted weakness. But what do you say about HaKadosh Baruch Hu? If David HaMelech is as guilty as says in Tanakh, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu like about David? That he was a strong warrior? HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want to put the muscles in. I mean, what's his problem to give muscles to good people, to righteous people? Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu swayed by a well-built body? I mean, it's crazy. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses David, and David is his chosen one, and David is the one that's the Melech Yisrael forever, and the Mashiach, and everything, he obviously is a person that is beyond what we imagine. And yes, there's still a lot of faults there. So the right way to look at it is that those faults are faults because he's a big person. It's just like if I buy a cheap lens and there's some minor microscopic scratches on it, it's nothing. What's the problem? You'll take just as good pictures with or without those scratches. They don't make any difference. If I buy a lens for thousands of dollars, every tiny scratch is meaningful. But it's meaningful because one of the things that's very irritating is sometimes you hear people who normally consider themselves Orthodox, and they talk with such arrogance about the others, and the message is very clear that they are by far superior. They never even dream of anything close to that. That's the tone of voice, and that's the attitude, and that's got conveyed. It reminds me of sometimes you see a kid, like a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old, and he's talking about a big basketball player. Ah, he stinks, he didn't do this, he missed a shot, it was wide open, was this, that, the other thing. It's kind of stupidly arrogant. A big professional ball player, a superstar, can do some stupid things, but they're stupid because where he's up to and what you expect of him to get, this should have been a shoo-in. So when we say he did a stupid shot or something like that, then it's something because he's professional and he's considered to be the best in the game that these things are false. The kid, it doesn't even dream of being anywhere near close to it by a million miles. It's very important. We do have to learn Tanakh. Tanakh teaches us moral lessons, including the foibles of great people. And we do learn from it. Yan lay amantan like the sheni. The Torah says it not to embarrass Moshe, but to teach us. But we need to understand that it's a proportion. It's just like saying, you know, if something is off by 1 degree, it depends. What that means depends on how far along the line that is. 1 degree at the base, at the point of divergence, could be a nothingness. And 2 miles later, it's quite far. The big people, and the Torah points out their faults for us to learn from, but they are faults because of big people. So that's why, for instance, by David, where the Navi presents it as a terrible thing, but we have to eliminate the obvious. She was not an Eshes Ish, but it was something he shouldn't have done. It was technically okay, but something that for many reasons, and you see when the Navi chastises him, he uses the Kivsas Harash Mashal, that he wanted something that for him wasn't much and for somebody else was his entire life. It was a very different perspective. He wasn't coming with that Avera. So it has a whiff of that Avera, but technically it's not that. That's the right way to learn it. And Ebenezer here is important, Ebenezer, to bear in mind. How bad an Avera is depends on the person. Yes?
So really, why does, in Tanakh, why is it expressed in such an explicit way? I mean, for Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not expressed in a explicit way, whereas by David HaMelech it is.
Well, it is. It says, Yam lohem mantem bi nakdisheni. You haven't believed in me to be Mekad Hashem Shemayim. It's a very powerful indictment of someone who's supposed to be the apex of Kali Yisrael. And his Avera wasn't that in that area. So, the Torah is expressing that point, and David HaMelech, the Avera was in a different area. No, each one wherever it was. By the way, just as a side note, we've probably spoken about other places, but it's one of the sort of one of the points of a truth check in Torah. There is nobody in the Torah that escapes uncriticized, unrebuked. So it's hard to attribute the authorship to any one of the people in the Torah, because if you take any other book written by anybody, take the memoirs of our great leaders, you'll find remarkable that they came out, they did nothing wrong, and everybody else did something wrong. You won't find anything about Muhammad that Chas v'Shalom did anything wrong, and you won't find anything about Yeshu. The Torah criticizes and lauds everyone as it is. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu wrote it, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who judged everyone and presents the emes. Okay, next one's Ramban. It says, Voya machna nishal ifleita. Al derech hapshat amaze bu'ulay. Al derech hapshat, he didn't know for sure, like Ebenezer points out before, rather he was making a hope, a wish. You know, he's saying, listen, maybe this way something will stay. Like we saw the Ebenezer brings before. The Torah teaches you, don't put all your eggs in one basket. This is a marker fit. The Torah taught us not to put everyone in one place. I want to make a remark about this and contemporary life. You know, let's take HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of the Cheshbon for a minute. And if we were looking at it as practical human beings, Derech HaTeva, the movement in the last 100 years has been that if all the Jews would gather into Israel, into the land of Israel, that would ensure the continuity of the Jewish people. Everybody come together and fighting and so on. If somebody, it's a sentiment, nobody's against Jews, nobody's against unity, and nobody's against Israel, so very hard when you argue with these things to have a reasonable argument. But a reasonable person would say it's the other way around. If you want to ensure the Jewish people would survive, then you need to have a group in Australia, a group in Germany, a group in the United States, a group in Chile, you know, whatever. Diversifying and not putting all your eggs in one basket assures survival. It's not the other way around. It means that each one, the less people there are in each group, there might be slightly more danger for each one, but certainly if you want to make sure some Jews survive, there's a much smarter way to it. So it's one of those things, one of those arguments where everyone seems to buy into it, but it's not logical. Now the argument has been that they will assimilate in any other place but in Israel, which also has its flaws, because, I mean, if you assimilate culture, if you're all in Israel, the name is Israel and the flag is blue and white, but that's the only element of Judaism that remains, then for all practical purposes you've assimilated. The fact that you have a different language, so if you describe yourself as just having different language, then yes, it survives. But if you're describing yourself with some sort of content and values, I have a hard time figuring out how that would work. But at any rate, so the Chazal teach us, from Yaakovina we learn that you're supposed to put eggs in different baskets to assure the survival of some eggs. V'Rashi kasa v'yamachna shil taita al karcha ke'lochi mimoi. Al fosim his kanaf sashashi t'varam filo darin l'muchama. He dressed him up innocently, but they had weapons on them secretly. So what he thinks in Rashi means al korcha ki lochim imoy, ki Yaakov yodea She'ein zaroi kuloi noichu b'reisav. Yaakov knew that everybody would not get killed out. Im kein yinotza machen ha kol panim. So he learns, and this is, we sort of, and Ezra said, had the same idea, that he knew that somebody would survive. So one or the other will survive. V'gamze yirmois, this is a remnant for the future also. She'li yigzru aleinim ne'esav limchat ha'shmeinu. The Esav will never be gozer to destroy us totally. They will do bad to us in different countries, to different parts of Israel. One nation, one melech is gozer on Israel, and a different melech is merachim on them. V'chein om reishis rabba, im yovo esav al amach nechaz b'kol, el achein eshe b'darim, v'y amach nechaz b'pleita, el achein eshe b'goyla. Ro'u ki gam l'daris tim ozay sepashu. This is one of the fascinating parts of Jewish history, is that there's not one country in the world, except for America, which is really a very recent country, that has not been goyza xeris against the Jews. That the Jews have not been unwelcome. We've been thrown out of every country, persecuted, and yet never all countries simultaneously. So we were in Germany and France, we were kicked out, we went into Spain. We were kicked out, we went to Turkey. We ended up in Poland. And so on. And always, Eastern Europe threw us out, America took us in, and so on. All the Xeris was remarkable was when the Spanish Inquisition landed and the Jews had to leave Spain, a few years before, I think probably 40 years before or so, Constantinople had changed from Christian to Muslim. rule. And it was a fluke. I said the word fluke. It was kind of unreal because it was considered, Constantinople was considered to be invincible. And it was like, it was a great historical fluke that it was conquered. And Turkey was the country that took in the vast majority of the Spanish emigrants that emigrated to Turkey. And Turkey was a flourishing tourist center for a long time, and so on. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu, every single nation has cast us out, but every single nation together, never ever together. And that's, Sosema says, Shloi Echad Bilvad Omer Aleinu Chaleseinu, all the nations never gathered as one to destroy us. Okay, the next one is a Ramban. It says, it speaks about the Malach and there's the Ikrim. It says, Vayak lo yochlo. The Malach saw that he couldn't vanquish Yaakov. So he's sort of bothered by the question. I mean, Malachim, I assume, are pretty strong creatures, and stronger than human beings. I don't know, made out of fire and stuff. Why couldn't they? Why couldn't the Malach vanquish him? So the Ramban says, Malachot gibor ekoach osed voro. Valkein lo yochlo ha-malach laziko, ki lo yhursho rak b'mashasi moi laheka kafirechoi. A malach does not have his own ability to act. So he was given certain parameters, and he could only act within those parameters. And he could not do more than to unhinge his foot. He could not kill him or destroy him or whatever. The Ikrim describes Malach a lot more about what a Malach is and so on. Vidai says, Kamalochim liyosim nivdolim michoymeh. Malachim, being that they're not material, the efshesher sigum amikram shachbal choymeh, they're not described in any way with physical phenomena, like jealousy, like sinner, like hatred, competition. There's no bad in them. They don't choose bad. They always do what's right. That's why they're allowed, when they speak to people, they can speak as if they were God. Let's just consider that a moment. He brings a few psukim. The Malach told Hagar, "Harba avasecha, I will make your children many." It all sounds as if the Malach was actually the agent that was acting, the active agent, which is not true. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Rabbi, how come there's the episode with the Malachim who came down to Sodom and said that they got onish because they said they were doing something?
So that we'll have to deal with. Those are there are a few exceptions where it says they said Mashchisim Anachnos Hamakom Hanefilim, the other those Malachim that fell down. There are a handful of things where Chazal say that this the Malach got hit for this, hit for that. It's something. It's the exception we have to deal with and understand what that means. But in general, a Malach has no persona, really. So just like when I send an emissary to speak on my behalf, the higher ranking the emissary is, the more of his own das he has, the less he has the right to speak in my name. If he's somebody who's a total lackey and just repeats verbatim what I tell him to repeat, and he's got no soul, then he can speak in my name, just like my secretary, my personal secretary, who has no official position whatsoever, signs my name because she's a non-entity, whereas my assistant or somebody who's a minister in the government can't sign for me because he's his own person. A Malach, because he has no bechira of self, no self, can speak b'shem Hashem because it's like a microphone. And so on. He brings the Ikrim brings all the places where you see that a Malach talks as if he were God. Next paragraph. But Tam Bechol said the reason for this is Ke Malach lo yamer pi Hashem l'achlev shichuso. The Malach will never disregard what Hashem said and change his shlichus. Lelitol shor l'atzmoy. He doesn't assume any of powers as his own. Lefisha nikra malach malach is a seichel nivdal. You see, a malach is called a malach, so it says nothing about his own abilities or metzias. Like this, we should talk about the malach about being some sort of auspicious being, a seichel nivdal. A malach means a messenger. Alo yisuf bo malach es Hashem. And he wouldn't be a malach, means he is a messenger. So just like if I send somebody to negotiate my behalf, or I send somebody with instructions, you as the recipient are not interested so when the person comes along and says, let me tell you a little bit about my background, my education, my skills, my this and that, they are of total lack of consequence. The only thing I want to know is that you are faithful to the one who you're representing. So the lawyer is not supposed to be putting down his position. He's supposed to be the mouthpiece for the person that he's representing. And therefore, presenting himself in any way is not significant. So a malach is called a malach because he's a messenger. The fact that he may be very holy, he may be Seichel Nibdol and all these wonderful things, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's business who he chose to be a Malach. It's not our business at all.
So why are they called Malachim instead of Shluchim?
A Malach means a Shliach. It's another word of a Shliach. It's you don't know whether it means a Shliach. V'chein enu ashoi lasis b'shas ashir shum dova opal shetur Hashem. He can't do anything that is other than what Hashem told him. And then he says, "V'loze ena malach ha'mishlech b'shirch Hashem rozik ala shmoi asheloi mitzar atzik v'ram yuchad loy mezulah b'shirch shtarach boy." That's where you find malachim are very coy about introducing themselves. Whenever they have, when a malach called Yaakov, she'omolei gidol shmecha, Yaakov said, "Who are you? Omolei lomazet ishal shmi." Not important. V'cheinam a malach al Manoach. Manoach asked the malach, "Who are you? You're like really neat. You know, you do all these things." Lama Zeh Tishal Shmi, doesn't make a difference, Upeli. My name is hidden. My name is obscure. It's not something that is of any significance to you. V'om le gamkein in tatsreni lo oichav lachmecha, dim tatsa oi lashem taleno. If you try to bring a carbon to me, I'm not going to take it. Ratzoloima, im talo oi lo li lo ikav lo isa, lecho dava. You want to know my name because you want to interact with me, you want to worship me. He says, it doesn't make a difference, he says, because I will not accept anything that you offer me. I've not come to you and not presented myself to you because of who I am. So I'm not going to help you knowing anything about me. So he basically was told that you have the Malach himself is of no significance. Don't interact with him. It's all Dvar Hashem. How Hashem chose to bring you this Dvar, he has Malachim Yitzavalo. It's interesting that Lamashal in the literature approach, like in some other groups, Sfarim, is like he's asked us to be mashbia malachim, and to try to get malachim to do your bidding. And there was one fellow in Yisrael, I don't know if he's still around, I have no idea. He had like a whole seance with malachim coming down and the kids seeing them bringing out this and Shavuos, and a whole thing. Somebody told me was there. I don't want to go through the whole long story how he does a thing, but it's something that was extremely, extremely looked down or frowned upon by the literature world. Malachim and are not to be dealt. Malachim are significant only in as much as HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses to give us a message to them. So the HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends his word through us through Kedusha, through a Malach. But Chas V'Shalom, that the Malach himself is of significance. Anything we learn about them is simply we learn about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not about Malachim. And therefore we're not misasik with Malachim. Let's give an example, just so we have a picture. A very, very successful businessman will have very, very competent and capable underlings, secretaries and representatives and agents and lawyers and whatever. He would like you to note the fact that he's part of his being very successful and part of his being high up the ladder is the level of the mesharsim that are around him. But if you try to strike a bargain with an underling, instead of with the, in other words, you want the secretary to write a letter for you behind the boss's back, that's subversion. The boss will tell you, okay, I think I'll write this, I'll do this, go to secretary and tell her to do this or that or the other thing. We're not misasking Malachim. We learn about it because it's Kvod Hashem, the river, Yerivan, Malachim, and so on. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to reveal himself that way, and it's correct to misyachas to it as Kvod Hashem. It is incorrect to misyachas in any way with Tefillah, Bakasha, whatever it is, directed towards the Malachim as such. Okay, we'll hold it here.